Good evening, everyone. Thank you all for joining. My name is Barbara Torres, and we're going to go ahead and get started with the Magnolia Public Schools Board of Directors meeting. Today is September 24th. It is now 5:37. As a reminder, our meeting is being recorded, and it will be recorded throughout the whole meeting, except during a closed session. With that, Rabbi Belia, can you please call the meeting to order?
Welcome, everyone. This is Rabbi Chaim Beliak. I'm calling the Magnolia Board School Board meeting to order, or something called order. I'd like to ask our board secretary to please read the attendance.
Yes, thank you. So I'll go ahead and take attendance. Rabbi Belia?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanel?
Here.
Dr. Dikbash? Ms. Gonzalez? Ms. Covarrubias?
Here.
Mr. Mohammeda?
Here.
Thank you. So 4 out of our 6 board members are present. We have quorum. We can go ahead and continue. Next, we have approval of the agenda. If one of our board members can make a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
I'll make the motion. This is Sandra Covarrubias.
Thank you, Ms. Covarrubias. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Rabbi Beliak. Before I take votes, I just want to remind everyone to state your name before speaking. If you're a member of the public, if you wish to not state your name, you don't have to, but if you want to, you can share your name with us. Let me go ahead and take votes for the agenda. Rabbi Belia?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanel?
Yes.
Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Mr. Mohammeda?
Yes.
Thank you. The motion has passed. Our agenda is approved. Next, we have public comments. Public comments are limited to 3 minutes per person, 6 minutes if translation is needed. No translation was requested for this meeting. Are there any public comments? Okay. No public comments. Next, we have announcements from our MPS CEO and Superintendent, Mr. Rubalcaba.
Thank you, Barbara. Good evening, board members, Magnolia family and community. Alfredo Rubalcaba, CEO and superintendent. So just wanted to give you a quick update on our health and safety as it pertains to Magnolia Public Schools and as it pertains to not only the state of California, but also our local jurisdictions where we serve our wonderful students and families. And with that, I'll turn it over to Jennifer Hook. Our wonderful team member to give an update. Go for it, Jennifer.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Jennifer Hook. Next slide. So as far as state level changes, there hasn't been anything new from the state. The tier system is still the same. And the instructions on small cohorting is still the same. Next slide. So as far as where our counties are, OC and San Diego are still in tier 2, and LA County is still in tier 1. Those are the updated screenshots as of September 22nd. There is a decrease from the last time I posted these pictures, so things are getting a little better. Next slide. Did you have anything to add, Alfredo?
No, go for it.
So there was an update to the LA County K-12 reopening protocol. They just added some additional guidance on school exposure plans. They also are requiring that schools submit a notification if they're going to be reopening for small cohorts. And as of today, they have a running list of schools that are that have submitted that notification. And MPS is planning to open schools for small cohorts starting October 5th. So we should be sending the county our notification soon. Now for OC, the schools were able to open K-12s in hybrid as of September 22nd, And then San Diego was able to open their schools in hybrid as of September 1st. So those are all the updates I have. Alfredo, did you have any additional context to add?
Yes. So as Jennifer mentioned, thank you, Jennifer. Once the guidance did come out from the California Department of Public Health specific to cohorts, or what we call small group instruction, we monitored the situation, looked at all the different steps that we needed to take to try to bring our kids back, especially our high need students. So with that, very mindful of our corresponding counties. So LA was first to interpret the California Department of Public Health guidance on cohorts, and they came out with their guidance on the 7th. And ultimately, that guidance is what drove all of us to say to ourselves, well, we definitely want to bring our kids back, and we want to first, focus on the assessment. Our English language learners require what we call initial assessments, and then our students with disabilities, there's also assessments with them, and then other types of assessments, whether it's health and safety, for hearing and screening, hearing screenings, vision, things of that nature, and then there's the students that have unfortunately not been able to, get the level of education that we expect because of connectivity issues or things. So what we have been planning for is to open up our schools, all 10 schools, to offer this small group instruction, mostly focused on these assessments for our English language learners and students with disabilities. The schools have been working tirelessly to implement all the health and safety practices as prescribed in our MPS health and safety for COVID-19 policy. So our team, accountability, operations, basically the entire team working around the clock. So that is our plan, to do that for all the schools. Obviously, we're waiting for more guidance from LAUSD for co-located sites and what we call SOAP occupant sites like MSA2. So we expect to get some notice, hopefully this Friday, on what steps we need to take to also open up our campuses there to offer small group instruction. So we will keep you updated. My hopes are that by the next board meeting, which is scheduled October 8th, that I'm able to say that we opened up all of our sites to offer small group instruction. And just so you get a sense of what that would look like at a campus, you're talking about currently, you have your administrators, you have custodians, office staff, and then if we were to offer small group instruction, larger schools would possibly bring back anywhere from, 8 to 10 students over the span of a week. It might be, closer to 20, 25, and all of them would be given tests, and then with that, to serve those students or to administer the test, maybe 2 or 3 teachers. So in essence, you're talking about no more than 25 people at a campus at one time. So with that, that would be under the 10% number that's allowed by the LA County Department of Public Health, and that's number of students compared to your entire student body. And then the California Department of Public Health is 25%, but we're obviously taking very small steps to bring our kids back to do the small group instruction, the assessments. So we will keep the board updated on that. With our Santa Ana school, last time we were here, we brought you the waiver application and also our reopening plan. So for Santa Ana, things... new information that has come to us is, Santa Ana Unified now has made it public that they will open up in a staggered approach the elementary. So November 2nd, they will open it up for preschool, kindergarten, and TK to allow those students to come back in a hybrid fashion. And then for first through third grade, November 16th, they would allow them to come back in hybrid. And then fourth and fifth graders, they would allow them to come back in a hybrid format, November 30th. And then for students in 6 through 12, Santa Ana Unified tentatively, because these are tentative plans as conditions change, they would bring their middle and high school students back after January. So with that new information and also ensuring that we implement all health and safety practices for Santa Ana, for our elementary students, we will definitely make a decision soon as to whether we want to also open up in November or if we want to continue with the waiver application. So that is something we still have to discuss in a comprehensive way, and we obviously will inform the board. And then San Diego, I think although campuses have been allowed to open in a hybrid fashion, we definitely are measuring local trends specific to our communities that live in the zip codes, you know, that attend our school. So that's something we're still measuring, and obviously also partnering with San Diego Unified School District to also understand their you know, analysis. And, you know, the benefit to that is whenever you are authorized by LAUSD or San Diego Unified School District, then whenever you are authorized by larger bodies like these districts, then obviously you're able to also be a part of their conversation and be able to take advantage of their experts and scientists and other university partnerships they have, and that gives you good info, so you're making informed decisions. So that in a nutshell is just the three different counties, and now I turn it over to the board for any questions that they might have.
This is my second time hearing substantially what we've just heard now. I heard it this morning, and I have a number of questions that pertain more to the question of subregions. So, for instance, in LA County, the subregion of let's say East LA is supposed to be one of the places that we have the most number of cases. And so the question is, in the places where we're opening, Orange County, where we're looking at working with the Santa Ana School District, it's a sub-region of Orange County. How is that going? And then the same question, we've been open in San Diego. How is the sub-region in which our school is located? Can somebody tackle that question, please?
Yeah, great question. And I'll turn it over to Gokhan. I think Gokhan and Erdinch have been, as part of the task force team, they've been on those weekly calls for San Diego County Office of Education. And then Gokhan has specifics about his locality. For Orange County, definitely Santa Ana is the city with the highest rates and positivity rates of COVID compared to the other cities in Orange County. But that trend, just like LA, has been dropping. And again, it's a positive sign, but again, just like we experienced in San Diego, that could change in any minute because of obviously specific isolated cases. But still, with Orange County, what we're hearing is that in the next 2 weeks or even less than 2 weeks, they might move into the more less restrictive tier, which would then be the orange tier. So that obviously would open up the economy more, plus schools. So we will continue working with our local partners and also our parents, our teachers, and our, you know, students, families, to find out how everyone's feeling before we make a decision to open up small group instruction November 2nd. But yes, Santa Ana is still the city with the highest case rates and positivity. And for LA County, one of the things that the LA County Department of Public Health has prioritized is they have said that they are going to start reporting that type of detailed data around different cities. And we know that when that information comes, we will have more of a sense of, and that information's already out, but the way they explained it, that it would be broken down by districts. So LA Unified, they would say all the schools located in this local kind of jurisdiction, this is your positivity case, so on and so forth. So for that, the analysis specific to all of our schools in LA, I don't know specifically which one is the highest and which one falls in the middle. I do know that the Southeast schools in LA Unified are definitely high, the highest, and then the Valley schools are somewhere in maybe the 75th percentile there. But we'll get that data once the LA County starts breaking it down based on districts. And they're also going to create a toolkit, which we were informed today, that will go on their website that will give more detailed information. So I'll turn it over to Gokhan to talk about local transmission rates in his or cities that his students attend. Gokhan?
Good evening, board members and public. This is Principal Sears from San Diego. In San Diego, maybe you saw it on the news too, but until this Tuesday afternoon, we were waiting to be in actually tier that's the most restricted tier, because our rates, expected rates for the previous week, last 2 weeks, would be about 7 new cases per 100,000 population. And on Tuesday, they made some adjustments to numbers because we most of the cases were happening at San Diego State University. We had around 900 new cases, and the numbers were adjusted according to the report that, and now the countywide number was 6.9. So we did not change a tier. With that said, we also have data showing our local numbers, and majority of our students, they come from the zip codes around our school, and the 92120 is our zip code, and the case rate per 100,000 for our zip code was 15.3, so which is pretty much double the amount of the required number to move to a purple tier. And when we look at other neighborhoods just around our zip code, it was, in general, it was less than 7. And one of the main reasons why our number in that zip code is high is because we are literally just less than 2 miles away from San Diego State University. And I think we have many students also residing in our neighborhood. With that said, currently San Diego Unified School District did not start a phased opening. They are still in agreement process with their bargaining units that they discussed this last Tuesday. And initially they will do a phased opening with the TK through fifth grade piece, and the middle schools are not going to open right away. But one of the neighborhood school districts, they started with hybrid learning in elementary school only, El Cajon Valley. And we know that some other neighborhoods, they announced that they won't be open the first school semester. So we have a lot of mixed decisions in our county, but we are observing San Diego Unified School District, and we are closely monitoring the numbers and meeting with the county officials and district charter office to make sure that we open the school when it is safe to open for our students. If you have any questions, please ask us.
Yeah, and thank you, Gokhan. Just to add to that, you might ask, well, why the October 5th date? Why the October 5th date? Because typically our English language learners They do have to take our LPAC assessments, specifically our initials, those students that obviously want to get a sense of what supports and interventions we have to give in case they don't reclassify. So that typically is done within the first 30 days of the school beginning, and with the passage of SB 820, that was extended 45 days. So now we have until October 30th to administer these tests. And although we've been given the option to do remote testing for LPAC, we all know as educators that the best way to really assess, you know, their level of proficiency is by having an in-person test. So that's why we are pushing for October 5th. So then we could test our English language learners, which is a total of about 44 that need to do initial assessments. And I forget the total number of other ELs that have to do summative assessments. But that's kind of why we've targeted the October 5th date. So we could do that. And then obviously with our SPED students, triennial assessments, which definitely psycho assessments, those things also best to do in person. Rabbi, did that answer your question?
It does. I think it for me at least, expresses the anxiety that I know we're all bringing to this responsibility. I'm wondering, do we have an estimate of what happens if we have to go back and forth in this process? By opening and then closing, do we have what does that cost us? I know that that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is the welfare of our teachers and our students. But what is the cost? Does anybody have a way of calculating that?
Well, I think we have a contingency plan in place, and that's also reflected in the policy that you as a board passed, our distance learning policy, and it's embedded also in our MPS health and safety policy. So that just speaks to our ability to go from one format to the other. So if we were to open up schools, let's say second semester starting January, and conditions based on the California Department of Public Health, if conditions did get worse locally in any of our schools, then they wouldn't require us to necessarily, you know, close and start distance learning again, unless obviously there was cases at the school that would shut down the schools. But all they would require of us is to do more periodic testing. And that right there by itself, if we were to have to do that more frequently than we're mandated to do right now, that could incur a cost, because obviously these tests, we can find a way to do periodic testing without the attached expenses. But once you do go up in frequency, there is those kind of that thinking of where, how is my rate going to look next year? When it comes to our healthcare provider, and we would have to get that data, because all that data is something is calculated, is used for calculation for the rate for next year for our health and wellness, line item, budget line item. But I think in terms, do we feel comfortable with our distance learning program? Yes, we feel very comfortable, and just much credit goes to our home office, our school sites, and teachers and support staff, because I think we've really done an excellent job, rolling out and improving on our distance learning program. So, I think it's hard to say what the actual cost would be, but we feel confident that, once we do go in person, that, we would still do everything in accordance with health and safety, our public health departments, and be able to shift from one to the other. We don't want to do that. That's why we've been so cautious about just sticking to distance learning and making sure that we get gauge kind of how our community is feeling before we make any judgment calls on to reopening.
Thank you. It was a long answer to an impossible question.
Yes, I know. Thank you.
Questions to our CEO?
Just a quick announcement for minutes purposes. Dr. Digbush and Ms. Gonzalez have joined us.
Welcome.
So we're listening to report our CEO on the different situations in the three counties. I think you can see for yourself it's looking like at least some of the counties are getting close to opening, and that we are in the middle of it in at least San Diego. Can I ask, this is a different kind of question. Today on the news, there was a announcement that the LA school district has been sued by a group of parents. Do you know anything about that suit? I know you're not being checked, you know, you're not being informed about it, but have you any insight into they're suing Butner for, and this is a whole mixed category of people that are have brought the suit, saying that the kids are not getting the proper education.
Yes, I'm not familiar with the suit that you're speaking about. I know there has been multiple suits, not only LAUSD, but other districts. So I would have to touch base with you and also look at that reference to be able to give you a much more just answer.
Other questions from our board members?
All right, so with that, I'll go to the second update. The second update, as all of you know, Barbara Torres has been serving as our executive assistant for 7 years. And with that, she's been going to school and doing many wonderful things to move up the ladder as we speak in our organization. And I'm happy to announce that today, officially, she is part of the Human Resources Department. She is our HR administrator, and with that, we thank her for her service. She's been amazing, obviously not only being a liaison to our board, all of you, but all the work she does here at the home office with the school sites. So we're thankful that she did an amazing job, and we know she's going to do amazing as an HR administrator. And with that, we did go through an extensive search to find someone that could do the work that she's been doing, and I'm happy to announce we have made, an offer, and we have someone in place for her. Her name is Jennifer Lara, and the thing that I want to say about Jennifer, she's very energetic, full of life, and she understands charter schools, so that's really good. So I just want to turn it over to her, and obviously today, we're all at the home office, socially distanced in wonderful downtown LA, because she's learning the ropes. But I want to just turn it over to her to say a couple of words to introduce herself to the Magnolia family and community. Jennifer, go for it.
I was on mute. Sorry, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. As Alfredo already mentioned, my name is Jennifer Lara, and I will be the new executive assistant for Alfredo and the board secretary here at Magnolia. I'm beyond excited to start and take over all the amazing work that Barbara has started and continue doing the work that she has been doing over these past 7 years. We're in the process of transitioning right now, and for this meeting, I'll observe how everything is going on. That way I can pick it up in the future. So once again, pleasure.
We can't hear her, nor can we see her.
We can. I see her.
Good for you.
she's. Maybe you need to scroll down on your slides, but I see her. Does other people see her? Do you guys see her?
Yeah. I think when you have the speaker set up, because the current we are hearing Barbara's microphone.
Yeah.
Jennifer talking. So
louder.
Okay, can you hear me all now?
She needs to turn her speakers up.
Try to unmute it.
Barbara, can we unmute you and mute? I'm sorry, mute you and unmute her.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So it was a long speech, what I just gave, but just to summarize it, my name is Jennifer Lara, but you can refer to me as Jen. So I'm beyond excited to be working here for Magnolia, for you guys, and for Alfredo, and continue doing all the great work that Barbara has been doing over these past 7 years. So it's a pleasure to meet you all. I'm super excited to speak with you more in the coming future. And once everything is 100% safe, I'm looking forward to meeting with you all in person. So besides that, feel free to reach out to me. I am starting today.
Thank you, Jennifer, and welcome on behalf of staff here at MPS. We welcome you, and we promise we won't keep you too long today, maybe 12 p.m. at night. No, just kidding. It'll be early.
I signed up to be here late. Don't worry.
Yes. Thank you for coming. I'll quickly just turn it to the rabbi. I think he was going to say something on behalf of the board since he's our chair. Rabbi?
So first of all, we want to thank Barbara for her service, as our CEO has said. And I want to thank Barbara for really knowing where everything is and having everything at her fingertips. I'm sure she'll continue with the same diligence in this new position, which is wonderful because Barbara's staying with our family. I also want to thank Jennifer for joining us and look forward to working with her. I think board members have received ways of connecting with her today in different notices, and I hope that you'll take note of that and keep that record handy. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi. And with that, we have other wonderful news. I think one of our board members has wonderful news to share about one of our alumni. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Covarrubias. Ms. Covarrubias, share away.
Hi, everybody. Good evening. As you know, my son is an alumni. He just graduated this June from MSA 2. He graduated with high honors. He also graduated from community college with honors. He received an associate's degree in STEM and behavioral science. And UCLA accepted him. And so he will start UCLA next week, October 1st. And our exciting news is that we found out that the 60 units that were transferred from Pierce converted into 90 at UCLA.
Woo!
So he will hopefully receive his bachelor's in 12 months to 18 months, hopefully, and so on. So that's the exciting news. And I just want to thank the whole MPS because we've been with you guys since elementary. So to Mr. Sirs, Mr. Ike, and all the way to Mr. Garner and Mr. Steve, Mr. K. So thank you guys for everything, for all the resources, for all the help, for everything. So I appreciate you guys.
That's wonderful news, Sandra. I'm creating a metaphorical chair for us all to hoist you up alongside your son. And we're dancing with both of you. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you, Rabbi.
Congratulations. That's exciting. Absolutely.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Congratulations. Incredible news. So proud of Julian.
Thank you. Thank you.
so proud of him. Please tell our best wishes. And hopefully maybe he will do his master's at Harvard. You know, someone didn't let him go.
Yeah, he's going to do medicine. So he wants to stick to UCLA. His goal is to work with the Dodgers in sports medicine. So he knows there's a connection with UCLA there with the Dodgers. So he'll probably finish at UCLA, but he's excited. So thank you guys so much.
All right. Great news, Sandra. Congratulations. It's always good to share these stories. And that's why we do the work. That's why we wake up each morning and work as hard as we can. Yes. So we could hear great success stories like your son. So continued success. And with that, I will turn it over to Barbara so she could get us started on our agenda items. Barbara?
Awesome. Thank you. So thank you all, Ms. Covarrubias. Congratulations. Thank you all for the best wishes for myself. I will be doing one more board meeting, so I won't officially say bye to you guys, but not bye because I love these board meetings. So I will continue to call in. Okay. With that, we're going to go ahead into our action items. So the first item is approval of the learning continuity and attendance plans for all MPS. We have our Chief Accountability Officer, Mr. Yilmaz, presenting. And just as a reminder, our staff will present. Then we will give time for public comments. Then we will open it up for the board to ask their questions and have their discussion. Mr. Yilmaz?
Good evening, board members and the public. We brought this item to you 2 weeks ago for a public hearing. And tonight, you have the item in front of you for approval. After you approve, we are going to post it on our website in a prominent location and share it with our authorizers. So this plan, it was great. 2 weeks ago, we had feedback from stakeholders. So principals were able to go back to their plans and make adjustments. They met with the finance team. So the plans are all ready for your approval. Tonight, I asked two principals to give some highlights from their plans. So I would like to call on the principal of MSA2, Mr. Garner, and the former principal of MSA2, current principal of MSA Santana, Mr. Keskin Turk. Take it away.
Hello, good evening, board members and the public. Mr. Garner.
Good evening, everybody. It is great to be reunited with my former principal, who now is a principal at another site, Mr. Kaskinderk, to make this presentation together about the learning continuity and attendance plans that we both have aligned with Santa Ana and MSA2. Thank you so much, board members, for having us.
Thank you, Ms. Barmarwa. Next slide, please. So just briefly, the learning continuity and attendance plan is a key part of the budget package, which is the SB 98, and it's giving guidelines and information to the local agencies about the budget and how to use the monies. Next slide, please. So one of the most important parts of that is the stakeholder engagement. And there were several layers of involvement. One of them is the MPS-wide reopening task force, which was gathered from teachers from all the schools, administration, and home office staff. Another one is the parent meetings, which all school sites are holding. There were several town hall meetings. We did like every other week at MSA Santa Ana. MSA2 did multiple as well. The weekly second cup of coffee with the principal, the monthly PTF meetings, and then the school site council and ELAC meetings, which all helped us with the plan. We had held also several staff meetings, at least three Wednesday meetings were assigned to get feedback on that. And also there is a reopening task force, which is helping us with the ideas. Next slide, please. So after all the surveys and feedback from stakeholders for the reopening, and the two cohort hybrid model was selected for MSA schools. And at MSA2 and Santa Ana, we estimated that 35% of the families will select the distance learning from the surveys, and this will allow us to lower the number of students in classrooms. And the cohort will look like that. Cohort A may come Monday and Tuesday, and cohort B may come Thursday and Friday, and Wednesdays is from home distance learning, so that the schools can deep clean the school site. Next slide, please. So distance learning, which we continue to do right now, but also we will offer 100% to any student or parent wants to continue with distance learning. So we are at the second phase of the distance learning. There were a lot of trainings and support to make it a better version versus the one in the spring, which we just jumped in. So especially the learning portal with the Google Classroom, Zoom meetings, Google Hangouts is a very supportive way to communicate and make it happen. In addition to the Parent Square, we added also the Student Square to have a better communication directly with the students. Next slide, please. Access to devices. MSA2 and MSA Santa Ana, we have 100% of passing out devices and internet. So we have extra on site right now at MSA Santa Ana, around 35 devices, which we look forward to pass out. We've passed out also to staff members. Today, another two came to get Wi-Fi connection, which is we are very proud of it. And the Chromebooks, we have a 1-to-1 ratio of Chromebooks at site, but we passed out around 185 to students and also desktops to staff members. Next slide, please. So Mr. Garner, from here, if you can continue from here, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Kestenbeck. So distance learning professional development is another aspect of the learning continuity and attendance plan that we took into consideration. And in particular, we've been spending time as an organization, MPS-wide. We did have a great support program with the several PDs that took place. We had DL for All, Google Classroom 101, Google Hangouts 101, Math Q&A, over distance learning, managing virtual classrooms, special populations. So all of these were incredible MPS-wide distance learning trainings that we did. We were able to be send our staff to attend, which were really great to kick this off. In addition, we also have at the new level here with the virtual learning, we're building capacity for hybrid. We also have an aligned 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock in the morning Wednesday PD that we have opportunities to collaborate across the organization to start the students on their live session at 10:05 a.m. at MSA2. And that's a great opportunity for us to have meetings, which help us really build capacity with this new model for staff and across the organization. We also have, in terms of surveys, we conducted with stakeholders about what the changes are that were recommended to be changed for distance learning program. And the feedback that we've been receiving has been really helping us make this program more robust across MSA2 and Santa Ana, as well as the organization. And we also had a summer in-service that focused a lot about in distance learning opportunities and promising practices. Next slide, thanks. So in particular, supports of students with unique needs. This is a really important and very, very relevant issue right now in terms of us getting ready to have our small groups come back to campus, which is our goal by October 5th, as Alfredo mentioned. In particular, for our English learners, we continue to designate and integrate ELD supports. We still have, we follow the EL master plan MPS-wide at MSA2 in Santa Ana. And in particular, we have EL 1 and 2 students that are having a designated ELD class. EL 3 and 4 students, those that are LTLs, then can be enrolled in additional designated ELD as needed. And then we also have the ELD standards, which are taught during the English classes, the LA classes as well. So they're integrated into the master plan, integrated into the weekly lesson plans as well that are posted on the MPS portal, which is a great part of our WAG system. We also have homeless and foster youth liaisons at our school sites that work directly with the Director of Student Services, Dr. Lopez, in supporting our students that are currently going through even higher level crisis and displacement of homes, during this really, really economic challenging time. And in particular, we do work with LACO, Jennifer Koch, with a lot of resources. We provide additional support, additional educational resources, backpacks, school supplies, Chromebooks. We've gifted to the students for these particular populations, and whatever their needs are, we really try to make sure we cater the supply, the services to them. And also students with disabilities, we have a lot of meetings with our special education teachers with the support of Dr. Callahan at the MPS home office to make sure that our special needs students are being supported, including pushing in special education teachers into the general education classes, having additional tutoring outside of the regular instructional day for small group pullout, Saturday school, small interventions for our special needs students and our EL students, as well as other students who are academically deficient. So these are how we, these are all the interventions that we do to make sure we don't leave it behind these particular very, very important subgroups of students. Thank you so much. Next slide. Once again, so pupil learning loss strategies. We start with our tier one interventions, which are universally aligned to differentiate in the classroom. And we also identify our students through a variety of different sources. We just finished, we're finishing up our MAP exams right now to give us math and English benchmark levels for the students across the organization at MSA2 in Santa Ana. In particular, we're using that to help the teachers identify who needs to be pulled out for additional small group instruction, who we want to recommend for Saturday school interventions, which we've used learning continuity and attendance funds to and LLM funds to really support as well. Increasing the hours for Saturday school with teachers and the number amount of weeks that we're providing Saturday school interventions is another intervention we've done this year to help address learning loss mitigation. And then once students are identified as needing tier two interventions, we have specialized classes based on the MAP scores, based on also the SBAC, based on IEB, IAB assessments. We help pull kids into math power classes and English power classes, as well as support them with their 504 plans and English learners. And then in terms of intensive interventions for those students that are level three in our tier of interventions, we have really specific catered interventions that we do. It's a customization of the parent feedback, student teacher feedback, MAP assessments, teacher scores and assessments, as well as collaboration with the home office. So thank you. Next slide. In terms of mental health and support right now, this is a really challenging time for our students. In particular, they're not seeing their friends. They're really feeling like they want to come back to school. Most of the kids are really missing that personal interaction. So we really have to make sure in this time we go above and beyond just our traditional mental health support, which we do in a variety of different ways. We continue to have a school psychologist that helps our special needs students and helps assess students, as well as service our students who are going through mental health crises and to provide those interventions. We have Zoom sessions scheduled for our special needs students where they go and actually have weekly counseling sessions as part of their IEP. We also have counseling that we provide to our students with interns through outside organizations, mental health agencies, and university interns that provide to our general education students. We also have a partnership this year with the home office and for our social emotional learning with the zones of regulation curriculum, which we're using an advisory to support our students. Our teachers have been trained in that, and we actually collaborate with our student government as well in terms of providing those supports in our PBIS, Positive Behavioral Interventions and Supports Committee, as well as our ASB student government, to help teach these standards, help students learn how to regulate their emotions and deal with stress in this time that's very new for our kids. Thank you, next slide. School nutrition, so we're very proud that we actually are able to provide free meals to all of the community again at both Santa Ana and MSA2. We previously were providing it to students who had a meal application completed as of the first day of school, but now we just extended this program until December through an extension of the grant, which is a great program for the whole community. Students can come receive meals as well as younger siblings, younger cousins. It's a community meal program distribution hub, and currently it's 2 days a week that we have the distribution for 3 hours at MSA2 on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and at Santa Ana as well, where students can come by and families can come by, as well as community members, to receive very important nutritious meals in this challenging time for a full week at a time, so they can go home with a week's worth of meals. But if they need to come back on a different day, there's two options for the families. We also at MSA do store the meals in a fridge that we receive from the meal vendors, so that if they cannot, parents come during this particular time, we can still have them come pick up food at any time, Monday through Friday, while our office is open 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. So that's a great service. We're really excited to continue to provide to our students and families during this really important time. And thank you so much. Next slide. I think this is the last one here.
Yes, that's the last one.
Thank you so much, board members, for having Mr. Kestenberg and myself. And I hope I was not too long-winded. I apologize if so. And thank you, everybody. Have a great night. Any questions for Mr. Kestenberg or myself?
Any comments from our public before we open it up to our board? Okay, board members, any questions or comments?
Do we have any idea of how many of our students are homeless?
Yes, we do, Rabbi. We actually have that information in CalPADS, as well as we have a meal. We have a residency survey that at the beginning of every year we collect from our families. So we actually do know that information. It's also in Illuminate. And so we have the exact number but what the limitation is, still, when I always kind of have to express the limitation, is that there may be some families that have yet to admit or disclose, like this is the case in any school, what is currently going on with the economic downturn, with loss of wages, with the current COVID, situation impacting so many of our families economically. So what we have to continue to do is monitor that. We have to continue to talk to our staff and train our teachers to keep their ears open. If the kids are talking in the chat room and they mention anything about displacement or now, a change in residency, we immediately update that list and we immediately include the student. There's no application process that they have to go through to be approved to be considered a homeless student. It's enough just to have an information shared by a teacher or a staff member in addition to the surveys. So that's our process of identifying students and families that are unfortunately in this really, really challenging situation of being homeless.
Hi, this is Mr. Yilmaz. So also last year we had about 108 homeless students. The prior year it was about 156. We are trying to provide resources for our students. Dr. Lopez at the home office also supervises the support system for our homeless students. Make sure that they get nutrition, they have access to textbooks, other resources, clothes, shoes. Our schools do a needs assessment for what their homeless population needs and work to meet those. We also have Title I funds reserved at each school site for homeless students, about like $3,000 per year at least. So we try to support them. Yeah, go ahead.
This is Covarrubias. Also, when I was a parent, I understood also homeless also doesn't necessarily mean like, they're in a shelter. I also understood that, like Mr. Gardner said, that if their situation changed, like in our behalf, like I lost my job, so I had to move in with relatives. You guys also consider that as homeless, right? The student living with other family members, right?
Yeah, doubled up housing or motels. Yes, they are all considered in that category.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the mistake that a lot of our students don't understand, that they, when they see, they hear homeless, they think literally homeless. They don't understand also that what it means, that it doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have a home. It just also means that by them living with other family members for a short time of period also can, it's also considered homeless.
Yes, so we provide an annual survey to our parents and we call it the residency questionnaire. Like, we don't call it homeless. So over there are questions that where we try to figure out and, whether they are in that category and need additional support. Yes, you are correct. I would like to thank the principals for implementing this wonderful plan. I would like to thank the home office departments, academic operations, all of the departments for really supporting our schools. Schools are focusing on like mitigating the learning loss, how they further support our students, their social emotional needs, as well as reopening the schools in person. So these are all going at the same time. So at this point, we would like to ask you to approve these plans, which are already in implementation. And then the next plan we are going to bring to the board for approval will be in November. It's called SIPSA, Single Plan for School Achievement, which is going to be about how schools use federal title funds to support our students, mostly like intervention programs, well-rounded education, EL. So that's going to be the next plan. So as you see, principals are continuously working, running from one plan to another plan and then implementing them. So there's a lot of accountability plans that are working on. So I appreciate all the hard work from our principals.
Thank you. This is Mirkan. Thank you, Mr. Yilmaz, Mr. Gardner, and Ms. Keskin-Turk. I had a pleasure to visit MSA Santa Ana and MSA 3 on September 16th, and I'm planning to do for other schools too. And it was great to see that the stuff that was is being proposed here is being implemented or doing their best to implement at those schools from what I saw, and MSA San Ana, how they separated the elementary and the upper grade students and their even entrances and all that. Great things are being done, and that given all the challenges that at MSA 3 are going through, having to be, Prop 39 and co-locating and all that. They are doing great there with Mr. Zeke. I was pleased to see and gladly to approve the plans, and seeing them implemented is great.
Thank you. Thank you, principals. Thank you, Mr. Yilmaz. Any other questions, comments, board members? Okay, if not, the motion for item 2A is to approve the learning continuity and attendance plans for all of MPS. Would one of our board members like to move that motion?
I'll make the motion.
I'll second it.
Thank you, Ms. Covarrubias, and thank you, Mr. Mohamedov. I will go ahead and take votes on this item. Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanov?
Yes.
Dr. Dikbash?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Thank you. The motion carries. Next item is item 2B, interorganizational agreements and repayment schedule. And for this, we have our Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Orzov, presenting. Mr. Orzov?
Yes. Thank you, Barbara. Good evening, board members and Magnolia family. As you may remember from July 23rd meeting, there was an item agendized for LAUSD site visit recommendations. As part of the recommendations, we worked on, particularly on the inter-organization transactions along with the others. The others are already taken care of, but what this particular item required is to work on the details, all the transactions throughout the years and reconcile them. And then as it come up with the end of the year balance so that we can basically accommodate the recommendation from the LAUSD, which is to align our policies with FICMAT recommendations. As you know, over the years, whenever we had some challenging cash issues, cash flow problems, we've been lending money from one school to another because we're under the same tax umbrella, tax ID. We're operating under one, organization. So that's not necessarily a lending the money to outside organization. It's called intra-organization loan, right? But nevertheless, because on the eyes of CDE and our authorizers, where each school is looked at separately, they would like us to better document adopt the guidelines on this from the Fiscal Crisis and Management Assistance Team, which is FICMAT, the organization helping the schools, the public schools, when it comes to fiscal matters. The guideline states that, it's okay to loan money between the schools whenever a cash need is, at one of the schools. But what needs to happen is the guideline recommends to reconcile the numbers as of the year end, And then if there is any outstanding balance, if any of those loans, short-term loans, were not paid back, then to convert those balances to loan agreements with specific terms. We're talking about like a specific payment schedule, an interest rate imposed on the balance, which was not paid off within the same fiscal period. So we worked on the balances and we were able to reconcile whatever the outstanding balances were, those were converted to loan agreements with specific wording around the terms of the loan. In front of you is actually, five different loans, one of which was actually brought to your attention previously. I think it was in April of 2020. It's a loan between MSA 5 and MSA 1. That one is already approved by the board. There is a resolution, but I think it was not put, in an agreement. So this is just to put that one is, it's already approved, but we're just preparing and approving the actual agreement itself. For the rest of it, there is brand new four agreements for your approval tonight. Those are between MSA 1 and MERV, the central office, MSA 8 and central office, Santa Ana and central office, and San Diego and central office. Besides from when this loan, which was approved in last year, the loan between MSA 5 and MSA 1, all of the other loans were being transferred through MERV, because there's been more than one transaction. That's what I think previously, practice. And that's why all of the loans are prepared between the school and MERV, regardless of what school is loaning money to what school. So for instance, for example, if MSA 1 is loaning money to MSA Santa Ana, the funds are being first transferred to MERV's account, the central office's account. And then from there on, MERV is loaning the money to Santa Ana. And the agreements were prepared accordingly. As such, there are four separate agreements between the MERV and different schools. There's an Excel spreadsheet with amortization schedule, which shows, it's a separate document. Rasul, it's an Excel file. You can see the intra-organization loans as Rasul is scrolling down, but there's a separate spreadsheet which should have been shared with you. It's on the board on track as well.
Mm-hmm. It's a separate file.
Yes, it's a separate Excel document, which shows all the balances for all of the locations, as well as the payment schedule, for all of the sites. So as you can see, can you make it a little larger? Yes, thank you. As you can see, as of June 30, 2020, if it's in black, it means that the school is the receiving party. And if it's red, it's the party who's gonna be making the payment or, the borrowing party. So if you can go up a little bit, Rasul, go up a little, please. If you look at line 12 for MSA 1, for instance, it's showing $550,000 in positive, which means that MSA 1 loaned that amount to central office and thereof, whichever school was in need, it was transferred to that school. MSA 8 is at positive $2.2 million. And if you look at, if you can see that MSA Santa Ana and MSA San Diego is, at negative, which makes them the borrowing party. There is a $500,000 balance in negative for MERV as well. And you can see the payment schedules down below, starting from 7/15. Once these agreements are approved, we're gonna be starting to make payments. For the first 3 months, we're gonna make one transfer to cover July, August, and September after the approval of these loan agreements. So that's briefly it about these intra-organization loans. If you have any specific questions or feedback, please go ahead and share those, and I'm happy to address those.
Thank you, Mr. Orzlov. Before we open it up to the board, any comments from our public on this item? Okay, board members, comments or questions?
Sirdar, this is Mikan. The about a half a million, the one that MRF has, is that the money that MRF borrowed for its own needs?
So that's a very good question, Mikan, but over the years, there's been more than one transaction. It's hard to say. It might be well that the one school actually extended a loan to another school, but maybe after the loan was extended or transferred over to MRF, the amount needed at the borrowing party might have been less than what was actually extended as a loan. And, you know, as a result, it stayed with MRF. But again, it's a combination of many transactions. It's hard to say. Going forward, it's our plan to actually reconcile these transactions on a quarterly basis, at least, so that we can track it better. But as it stands right now, we just looked at the June 30 fiscal year end balances, and we're converting those to loan. But you can see that MRF is going to start making those payments back to schools starting July 15. And we looked at the cash flow situation at all sites. It looks like even with the cash flow deferrals, the school should be able to, pay monthly amounts. One thing though to note, we don't know if the PPP loan will be forgiven. If it's not going to be the case, if we need to start paying back the PPP loan, probably we will have to come back to you and have some adjustments on this payment plans, as we will need more cash to pay, especially for Santa Ana and San Diego. We're gonna need to kind of look at it separately to make sure that the schools are being able to pay the PPP loans back.
Okay, great. And also from what I'm seeing is that I looked at the agreement. It says that if extra deferrals come in, then these payments are subject to change as well, right?
That's right. So that's specifically we wanted to have in the agreements, noting that if there will be any cash flow deferrals over what we see at the moment, which is already quite significant, then we'll have to come back to you to adjust these payment plans, as the schools will not be in the situation to pay these monthly payments.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Just to review, this is Rabbi Chaim. Mm-hmm. Agency loans are the result of shortfalls, not only in the number of students that were expected, but other things as well, correct?
So for the most part, I think it's for the shortfall in the budgets, but in the case of the loan from MSA 5 to MSA 1, as you know, MSA 1 it had a significant, construction project, and we had shortage in cash, and that's why we had the loan from MSA 1 to MSA 5 to MSA loan, for $1 million, so that the school is able to complete the project and still be operational and need its cash needs for the operations.
So a follow-up question, please. Most of these inter-agency loans are not at our cohabited sites, but at our sites that we own. Is that correct?
Yes, that's true, except for MSA 8 and MSA 5 as well. For MSA 1, we own the property. MSA Santa Ana, we own the property, and San Diego as well. We're leasing the land, but in terms of the property, the fixed assets, we own. That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there other questions to Sidhar?
Okay. If nothing else, board members, the motion is to approve the inter-organization loan agreements between MRF, Magnolia Education and Research Foundation, and school sites. Any board member would like to move that motion?
I'll make a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Mohamedov. Do we have a second?
I second it. This is your committee.
Thank you, Dr. Yapanel. Go ahead and take votes. Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanel?
Yes.
Dr. Digbash?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Mr. Mohammadov?
Yes.
Thank you. The motion carries. Okay, our last action item is approval of revised health and safety policy for COVID-19 and approval of injury and illness prevention program. And our Director of Human Resources, Ms. Harsh Mirza, will present.
Hi, good evening, board members. This is Daria Hajmirza. I am the MPS HR Director. In front of you, I'm presenting an updated MPS health and safety policy for your approval based on the most recent California Department of Public Health and LA County Department of Public Health guidelines. And then as you'll see in the highlighted section in the policy, we have updated the testing protocol as LA County Department of Public Health gave further guideline on how the testing would look like once the staff and the students come back to school school sites. And with that, we will implement the testing option 25% of the staff every 2 weeks or 50% of the staff every month through their health care service provider. And those test results will be reported to the LA Department of Public Health. And on the second, one on the testing is students and families are strongly encouraged, but they're not mandated to be tested. And they will be able to use the community clinic to get tested. And the second update we made to the policy is the contingency plan for continuity using distance learning if the school site must be closed in person for in-person instruction. And the last one that we updated is for youth sports and physical education. And based on that one, MPS will conduct sports and physical education classes only when distance distance of 6 feet and a stable cohort that limits the risk of transmission. This does not apply to us for now, but we have it in our policy. And with that, I'm open to any questions and comments you may have.
Thank you, Daria. Any comments from our public? Okay, board members, comments or questions? Okay, if no comments or questions from our board members, the motion for item 2C is to approve the updated health and safety policy for COVID-19. Can one of our board members move that motion?
I'll move the motion.
Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez.
I'll second it.
Thank you, Ms. Covarrubia. I will go ahead and take votes. Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanel?
Yes.
Dr. Dikbash?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Mr. Mohammadov?
Yes.
Thank you. The motion carries. That is the end of our action items. We do have a closed session tonight. Rabbi Beliak, can you please make the announcement?
Yes, we are going into closed session. We have items that we need to deal with regarding some legal matters, and we'll report out at the conclusion of the closed session.
Thank you, Rabbi Beliak. So with that, this session remains open for the public, and I will send everyone that needs to be in closed session into the breakout room. So just accept your invitation.
Can you hear me? Anybody?
Hi, yes. Let me go ahead and send you into the closed session.
Perfect.
Okay, you should have gotten the invite. Did you see it? Okay, everyone else, I will be on mute, but if you have any questions, I'm here. Okay, welcome back, everyone. Again, my name is Barbara Torres. We're back on the regular board meeting of the Magnolia Public Schools Board of Directors, and we are back from closed session. Rabbi Beliak, do you have something to report out?
We had discussions, and we have directed staff regarding some issues, and we look forward to their responding to our discussions.
Thank you. With that, we can go ahead and adjourn the reading, the meeting. It is now 8:17. It is time to go to sleep.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
It was nice seeing you.
Bye. Take care. All the best, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Bye. Nice. Bye.